Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast. This is, I think, episode number 24. I'm your host, Michael DeCamp. My usual co-host, Angela DeCamp, is not with us today, but I have someone even better. I've got my wife.
Take that, Angela. This is Nancy.
Nancy DeCamp. And with us on the, she's on the phone, but she's being interviewed here on the podcast, is a fellow author. She has the same agent as I do. You may have remember from a couple of episodes back when I interviewed Sarah Joy Freeze, as my agent. This guest also has Sarah as her agent. And I'm here with Lynn Hartke. Hello, Lynn.
Hey, Mike. Thanks so much for having me today. And hello, Nancy, as well.
It's great to have you on here. And before we get into your stuff, I have a little bit of updates on some of my own. Since the last episode, my sequel to my first novel, was Abandon Hope. Those of you who are regular listeners would know that. It was published originally in October of 2017. Around that same time, I started the sequel. 3 years later now, I've got a new publisher for Abandon Hope, and my sequel has just been released.
Yay!
As of Friday. And the Friday, the Kindle version came out, and today the paperback version is now available also on Amazon. And it's available now. Yeah. So go get it. Go get your sequel.
Go get it. Read it.
So that's my news of the week.
I've not read anything bad in it.
You haven't read it at all.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Lynn, my wife is my greatest supporter and my greatest critic. So she read my first novel, and she thought it was really well written, but it's not her kind of story, so she didn't really like it. Is that fair?
That's fair.
So
not her genre.
That's it exactly.
Yeah, she likes touchy feely, and I like dark and scary.
Sometimes, yeah, I just in the dark side of things doesn't bode well with me.
Yeah,
I can sit that on the news.
Well, and there's plenty of that right now. So
I'm that way with movies. I don't want dark and scary in a movie. So
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Now, see, I kind of like scary movies. Although my taste in them has changed over the years. I'm not quite as into some of the dark and scary stuff as I used to be. But as far as movies, yeah, it is that time of year though for scary stuff on TV. Last night, I think it was it AMC that was running a Halloween marathon.
I don't remember what channel, but yeah, the Halloween movies were out there.
Yeah. So we're going to do the creative moment of the episode. So let's take a moment to do that. I actually started a new book this week, and we were just talking about scary and dark. I was looking on my bookshelf and discovered that I had a horror book that I hadn't read. It was on my bookshelf, and I'm like, what is this? And I picked it up, and it's called The Vampire of New York, which is I'm like, where did this come from? And so I picked it up and I started flipping through it, and it had a flyer in it from Pearl Harbor. And Nancy and I and our girls visited Hawaii in 2008. And I must have picked that book up for that trip and not read it. Mm-hmm. And somehow it survived on my bookshelf for 12 years without me even noticing it. So I started reading that. So far, it's pretty good so far. So we'll give more of a full review of it maybe on the next episode. But right now, I'm kind of enjoying the Vampire of New York by Lee Hunt. Nancy, do you have a creative Moment of the week.
I will say creative moment of the week as we're entering in the Midwest cold weather and our family is pretty isolated in the choices of how we're behaving right now for some specific reasons. How do we stay connected with friends through the holidays? And so kind of mapped out some activities that we can do together as a family and then do kind of drive-by drop-off of things. And I don't want to say what they are in case somebody listens and they wonder if they're my friend or they
don't
might
give away the secret.
Yes. But we had kind of a little brainstorming session this afternoon. So I feel like that was my creative point for the week.
I wasn't involved in that brainstorming session either, was I? So it could be just as much as a surprise for me as it is for anybody else. So,
Yeah. And I think we have to be creative right now in this time, right?
Yes.
To keep connected with people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what about you?
Yeah, I have a sister. Oh, okay. I'm enjoying a book called Devotions by Mary Oliver. So it's a selection of her many years as a poet. And I actually got it at Christmas, but I dug it out during this pandemic. I like how she writes finding God in nature.
Nice.
And it's like, wow, she finds it in a swan or she finds it in reeds next to the lake or whatever. And just, I like the deep thinking in a short amount of space.
Does it have a title?
It's called Devotion.
Okay. Yeah. I'm writing it down.
What's the author's name again?
Mary Oliver. Was that
Mary Oliver?
Okay. Well, we'll.
I will say from a book perspective,
she won a Pulitzer Prize. So she's that kind of writer.
Yeah, I've heard of Mary Oliver before, but I can't say that I've heard of that particular book. So thank you. I actually just ordered it. I noticed as I pulled into the driveway, there was an Amazon box on the porch.
Really?
I just ordered the Rachel Held Evans book Inspired.
Oh,
because I'd heard a lot of things about that. And that's been on my want list. And when I was ordering some things from Amazon the other day, I thought, well, why not?
So that's probably what's on the porch.
Yeah.
Okay.
And did you order on Prime Day? Did they give you a deal?
I did not. I don't worry too much about that stuff. I don't own that much. So I probably should have. But
now, Lynn, you are, I think that covers all three of us. Let's just jump right into our discussion with you. You hail from the great state of Arizona, is that correct?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Right in the middle of the Sonoran Desert.
And as we were recording this, it's Sunday afternoon, and for whatever reason, I had it in my head when I originally scheduled this that she was in Florida. So I set the recording time for 3:00 in the afternoon, not realizing she was 3 hours behind us. Right. So three hours, correct?
Yeah.
And well, that would put her right just getting home from church. So we did a little adjustment.
Have you always lived in Arizona?
Yeah. We have lived here 35 years.
Okay.
So it's the only thing our kids have known.
Gotcha.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Just bouncing off that question, give us a little bit of background on who Lynn Hartke is, whatever you're comfortable in sharing.
Sure. Well, I am a published author who loves to hike, and we have hiked all over this state. And of course, Arizona is one of the premier hiking locations in the world if you can learn to find beauty in the desert. But we also have the mountains on the north side of the state, so that's very fun. I am a 12-year breast cancer survivor. Awesome. And one thing I love to do is help other cancer survivors find words to their story. I like to say cancer doesn't get to keep our words, steals a lot of things, but doesn't get to keep our words. And so I do have an online class for people who want to work on their cancer story. And let's see, I'm married to a pastor and who is also a mayor. And we have 4 grown kids and 4 grandchildren. And that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Well, that's a pretty varied situation. Now, what did you say a second ago where you were from before Arizona?
I grew up in Albert Lea, Minnesota, in farm country at the bottom of the state.
Okay.
And when my husband and I were first married, we lived in Grand Marais, Minnesota, which is on the north end of the state, but we worked among the Cree First Nation people in Canada, up by the Arctic Circle. So we went from, you know, 40 below zero,
right,
as low as thermometers go, to, you know, we just passed our 145th day of over 100 degrees.
Wow.
That's just crazy. New record.
Wow.
Because, you know, it's 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. 2020. What a year. What a year to be alive. Yeah. You know, one of these days we'll look back at 2020 and we'll laugh about the stories and talk about all that, but that'll be a while. It'll be a while before before we're over
and
that.
And I wonder if we'll all lose the phrase, well, that's 2020 vision. Just like,
Yeah, we don't want to use that anymore.
Yeah, let's change that a little
bit.
Not
a positive thing.
I want 2021 vision.
Yeah.
So
something.
Now, I really like the state of Arizona. Nancy and I and our girls took a vacation to, obviously, you know, the big vacation spots, the Grand Canyon, right? So we flew into Las Vegas, spent one night there, and then drove across the Hoover Dam and spent 3 or 4 days at the Grand Canyon. And then we cruised down and we went over to, we went to Montezuma's Castle and Sunset Crater. And then down through, what's the name of that area we went through?
We went through Sedona.
Sedona. And we stopped at, Slippery Rock or Slide Rock?
Yeah, we stumbled across Sliding Rock Park or
Slide Rock at Oak Creek.
Yes, yeah. We accidentally stumbled across that and had just the best time ever there.
It was a spur of the moment. It was a spur of the moment stop. That was pretty awesome. And then we spent the night in your
Arizona's here. A beautiful state.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We spent the night in Phoenix and then we drove to San Diego through the
down through
the
Yuma
desert.
And
it's interesting when you go to the rest stops on the interstate between Phoenix and in California that it says stay on the sidewalk, rattlesnakes, you know, watch out for rattlesnakes.
I would say in the 35 years we've lived here, I've only seen 5, and we hike a lot. There's around February we don't take the dog out, because rattlesnakes are coming out of, you know, their winter stasis or whatever, and they come out hungry and mean. So poor dog has to stay home in the month of February.
Now that's saying something right there when you're saying, you know, they're coming out of their winter. It's like their spring is in February, Nancy. What do you think of that? I think Arizona's sounding better to me all the time.
You're trying to tell somebody who likes snow that it sounds good, my
wife,
right?
My wife likes snow. She would move up to your...
Remember what I said.
Yeah, she'd move to your original home state.
145 days,
So, how long have you been an author? When did you start writing?
I kind of dabbled in writing on and off, but I was a worship leader for many years, and I felt I didn't have the creative brain space to do both and raise kids and, you know, be a pastor's wife and all that. So it was actually after I had cancer. And I made the decision, I'm going to quit waiting for someday. And so I started taking some college classes at that point. Interesting enough, all fiction classes. But then I ended up writing a memoir, a nonfiction book, Under a Desert Sky, called. And so that came out in 2017.
Now,
pretty new at it. Still.
I saw that on your website, which, by the way, is, I think it's lynnhartke.com. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we should probably spell that out so that the listeners can make sure they find that correctly. So lynnhartke.com.
It's actually lynne. That's at the end of my first name. And then Hartke. Yeah, lynnhartke.com. Yeah.
See, now it's good that I messed it up, because then now people will remember it, that you fixed that, you corrected it.
Yeah. I was taking college classes pretty much with 18 and 19-year-olds. So at that time, that was my children's age.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, critiquing their writing. And but realizing, you know, I had a lot of life experience at that point. And I feel it helped me become a better writer from what I'd lived through. So if there's other people listening out there, if you're in your 40s and 50s and 60s, go for it. You've got the life experience.
And I think it's awesome. I love that they say that everyone has a book in them or a story in them. but there aren't that many that actually put pen to paper, so to speak. So, you know, kudos to you, especially the encouragement that it does really doesn't matter your age or experience. You can apply yourself and you do have a story to tell. So,
yeah. And
I think especially if nothing else, your family wants to know, right?
Yes.
They want to hear about the wisdom.
I was going to say, to be fair, I'm sorry. I'm the world's best at interrupting, so I apologize ahead of time.
I'm going to buy her a trophy for it.
But to be fair, once you're, you know, you're telling me that, you know, you were worship minister and, you know, pastor's wife and you had kids, and I'm sitting here like, yeah, I work and I had kids and this and that. It is a little easier as they get older for you to invest yourself in pursuit of actually putting it to paper. And sometimes things stop you. I find it interesting that your experience with cancer was like, okay, do it now. Now's the time to, you know, sometimes life experiences give us pause to focus.
Well, yeah,
I've actually tell people, usually meet with people after they have cancer, you know, they have to meet with me. And I usually give advice and tips, and I want to tell them almost always, don't waste your cancer. Don't be the same person that you were before you had cancer when you're done. You know, make the life changes you've already talked about doing. And interesting, I find people with the pandemic now almost having the same mindset. Like, oh, I want to make these life changes. And don't waste the pandemic.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great point. That's a great point.
Because they're both circumstances beyond our control.
Well, sometimes I think people always assume they have so much time in front of them, right? And I'll get to it eventually. And you don't really know how much time is in front of you.
Or they're looking for all the green lights. And there's, on any journey, there's going to be a red light to stop you for a minute. Yeah. And
yeah, when I get all their ducks in a row or everything lined up or, you know, life is, you know, in a groove, then that's when they'll do that stuff. And I've yet to find all my ducks lined up and life being in a groove. There's always some sort of hiccup or problem or issue or complication that makes it difficult. You know, people ask me sometimes, how do you find time to write? Well, I finally had to schedule time, and it's not a lot. I only squeeze out about, on a typical work day, I only put in about 30 to 45 minutes of actual focused writing time. And, you know, it takes a long time to accomplish it, but if you do it every day and you're consistent, you get there, and it's a whole lot faster than thinking I'm going to do it eventually. So off of that,
Lynn, did you just sit down and write your book all together, or did you do a little and come back, or what was your process?
It was actually a compilation of probably 4 years of blogging. And that was the premise of the book. And then, you know, obviously filling in. And so it was a memoir of my cancer story. But both of my parents had cancer at the same time I did.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, a story of hope and God's faithfulness in extremely hard situation. So I would say when I sat down to do the bulk of writing, I did it in 3 months. But then 2 years of tweaking.
Yeah. The tweaking. That's the hard part, right?
Yeah, you can tweak these things to death. I mean, you really can. The manuscript that I just basically my novel that just released. First of all, my publisher is really, really fast. Like if you go to a traditional publisher, you know, I submitted the final manuscript just a week before last, I think, to my publisher. And if a traditional, like high end New York publishing house, it might be another year before it actually sees the light of day. Well, I'm with a small press, and so she's fast. And I mean, it's already out. But the thing is that I thought it was perfect, right? As perfect as first of all, I thought I had it ready for her. And I was about to send it a week before I did. And on a Saturday morning, I I was going to fiddle around, was looking at doing some, maybe something special with it. And I thought, well, I'm going to read 4 random sections. I'm just going to pick them randomly. And if I don't find anything of any consequence, then I'm going to go with it. Well, right off the bat, I found something.
Found something. I heard it.
And then I found something. Yeah.
He was like, oh.
And then I found something else.
Heart hitting the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, every random section I looked at, I'm like, oh, this, And finally, I'm like, okay, I just got to pull the trigger. I'm going to have to go through this line by line again. And I did. And I went through it. And I'm so glad I did. I got all those things ironed out. Then it's perfect, right? So I send it to her and she released it onto Amazon. And I sent her the back cover blurb and the acknowledgments page and the author bio and all that too. Well, I went to Amazon and I'm reading the back cover blurb that I sent to her and I misspelled a character's name on the back cover blurb.
So you had to get that corrected.
And I'm like, oh, man. Oh. And so, I felt so bad because she's already done all the formatting and all that. And so then I pull up the manuscript and I search that because I wanted to see, I misspelled that character's name. And so I put it in the search, incorrect. And sure enough, I did it in the body of the manuscript too. And so not only was the back cover blurb wrong, but so was the manuscript. I had to fix both. I just had to apologize to her profusely. And she's like, oh, that's no problem. This, you know, that's one of the joys of a small press. We can take the time to fix things. So, you know, that was kind of a joy, but, you can tweak these things to death.
Lynn, did you do yours all yourself? Or did you have a team of people who, you know, maybe who spot read it for you or gave you input?
At the beginning, I had some friends who did a read through. I think maybe 5 friends that went through it. And then I was with one of the main publishing houses within the Christian, you know, genre. And I think it went through 3 rounds of edits with them. So it was the year-long process after it was finished. And like you said, each one of them had corrections, like, wow, a year later and we're still correcting. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So who ended up publishing it?
Revell.
Oh, okay. Revell. Okay,
very good. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. How long has that book been out?
Since 2017.
Oh yeah. You said that earlier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My apologies.
Yeah.
Cause it came out about the same time as my novel did, my first one. So
Do you have any other books in the works?
I have a proposal out there right now that my agent is shopping around, and I've had 2 books since rejected in various stages since mine came out. So nothing else out there. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's a process in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, writing's in your blood now. You know, it's funny. Yeah. It took me about 89, about 20 years to start writing my first one. And then it took me about 7 or 8 years to get it written, edited, adjusted, modified, and published.
Tweaked.
Yeah. And then 3 years later, I've now got 4 books out. So it's
wonderful.
It's kind of exciting. It's kind of in my blood now. So now I want to keep cranking them out. So hopefully I'm getting better and faster. It's in your blood now, so you got to keep going.
Right.
Do you always think you wanted to write a book?
I didn't actually think that I would write a book. I thought, you know, I would do magazine articles or things like that, more along that line. I loved blogging, for example. Mm-hmm. But then I just started writing, I would say mainly for myself. After the whole cancer experience, I thought, I've got to get it down on paper. And one thing that's common with people in cancer or another traumatic diagnosis is that you live in the overwhelming now, just the immediate present. There's not really a past. There's not really a future. And so I wanted to go back and write about what happened, to be honest, to see where God was in the pages. And so I wrote first for me. And then I showed it to a friend who'd been published and said, I think I should show this to my agent. And that's what happened.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
So did you?
Yeah, my parents both ended up dying from cancer. So it was partly, you know, processing that grief and, you know, God, where were you?
Working, yeah, working through that.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your parents. I'm sad about that. You know, I've lost both my folks, and Nancy's lost her dad, just a few years ago. My mother actually had throat cancer, went through, chemotherapy or not chemotherapy. She had radiation therapy on her throat, as an 80-year-old woman. And she ended up not being able to swallow very well. And anyway, complications led to complications. And even though they got rid of the cancer, she still ended up passing away shortly after she got through the process. So
I'd like, you know, what you said there though, and I didn't capture the exact words about when you're going through a traumatic scenario like that, that there's no future, there's no past, you're just in it. I can think of a time in our life with a family member who had a traumatic scenario. We were trying to figure out what in the world was going on. And that's very much how you feel.
Yeah, it's a picture of someone in the ocean being hit by continual waves. It's like you feel like you're getting your feet back under you, and then you get hit again. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. The overwhelming now. Yeah. It's challenging.
Yeah, the overwhelming now. I like that. I'm going to remember that.
Mm-hmm. That might be the title of this episode, The Overwhelming Now. So, Lynn, how has having a pastor as a husband affected your writing? Or maybe the other way around. Maybe the other way around. How has your being an author of a spiritual book impacted your husband in his pastoring work?
That's a good question. I don't think anyone's asked me that one before. It's actually more of an interest, the fact that my husband's a mayor and that I write in the Christian genre and am asked to speak at events, you know, as a Christian speaker. I think that might be more of an interest. And I mean, it's not like an embarrassment or anything like that. It just puts a definite flavor to events that I'm asked to speak at. It's either going to be a Christian event, or I do get asked to speak at cancer events all the time.
Oh, that's good. I have a friend in St. Louis area who, she is a breast cancer survivor, and she started a nonprofit that is specifically for supporting breast cancer victims. And she's started a podcast. Maybe I'll try to get you connected with her. That actually might be a kind of a cool connection for you to do her podcast, talk about your book and your experiences as it relates to that.
That'd be great. I would love to.
Yeah, I think I can talk with her about that and make that suggestion. So
I could probably give her several names if she's interested. So,
well, that'd be cool. Now, do you have, I don't have a copy of your book at this point, Lynn. Do you have a copy nearby? Are you in a position where you could maybe read a little section for us? I didn't give you a heads up on that. Sure. So if you don't, then we'll skip it, and I'll just delete that question from the, from the podcast, but, want to give you an opportunity if you've got it there. The title of the book again is
Under a Desert Sky, Redefining Hope, Beauty, and Faith in the Hardest Places.
Okay.
And I am talking about a time where my dad makes a decision to purchase a white convertible after his cancer diagnosis. Dad purchases a white convertible, a bucket list car, he called it. Are you coming home to Minnesota because you think I'm going to die? Dad asks me on the phone when I call. No, I reply. I'm coming to ride in your car. And ride we do. We ride to town for groceries. I drive to meet a friend for coffee. We take photos of the grandkids as they each take a turn in the driver's seat. And one night, just because. We pile into the car and cruise the town to get ice cream. Afterward, we take the long way home, meandering our way past a church, a dust-shadowed lake, and miles of cornfields. The wind flings my hair in all directions. The strands escape any attempt at containment. Mom offers me a headband, but I decide to let it fly, uncontrolled, uncontained, unrestrained. In a white convertible on a wind-whipped night during a desert journey that began with a phone call saying it was cancer, joy finds me. Unexpected joy. With the top down, I discover the reason for keeping a gratitude journal, a rationale for recording the daily thanks, at least three reasons each day. I began the discipline after Dad's diagnosis. It is not a kindergarten exercise of writing, I'm thankful for the color purple, or I'm thankful for spaghetti. It is deeper than that. Thankfulness is not given in a void. Thankfulness is given to someone, to God. It is a yielding, a bending, a trusting He is control. The giving of thanks is the result of a submitted life.
Thank you.
I like that.
Thank you for sharing that. What do you hope is the outcome of your work when it comes to these writings?
I guess my hope would be that in someone's darkest place, they would know the love of God goes deeper still, and that there is hope to be found. It might be an eternal hope, but there is hope in the darkest diagnosis. So our family lived it, and we know it is true.
Do you feel like you found hope, or what I like to call little scenes of grace, throughout your experience? Or do you think that they came to life even more when you were writing the book?
I think they were there when we were living it, but it took me writing it to uncover them in my own heart, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I know my dad, when he was asked, you know, how they were doing when they were both going through chemo, I think he would say, well, I'm going to live until I die, and then my real life will begin. And I think, you know, they left this incredible legacy. And so it wasn't just my story, but recording the legacy that they choose to live, and knowing it was their end chapter. I mean, not everyone gets that, and that's actually a gift. Might not see it that way at the time, but the gift that they chose to embrace of it being, hey, it's our final chapter, and we're going to be intentional about how we're going to live it.
Well, and seeing that modeled, I think one of the things that impressed me most after my dad died, I felt like for the next year, I was still learning from him, because I would be faced with the situation, and I would think about how he would have responded or what he would have done. Mm-hmm. And because of that modeling, the choices that they make when they're going through something like that have a much more profound impact than we recognize at the moment.
Yeah. And I think one of the final gifts we give our children is to talk about eternity. Mm-hmm. And I know of people that aren't sure what happened to their parents because they never talked about it. Or a brother or sister or whatever. And it's like, what a gift we give people when we talk about it. So there's not a question.
Lynn, what's the book that Sarah is floating around out there? Are you in a position where you can tell us anything about that so we can know what to look forward to when it finally does find a home? Or do you need
it
to keep that
under
your...
It is a devotion. I mean, I can't talk about title or anything like that, but it's written under the devotion genre, with discovering God in nature. So I actually became quite a hiker, as another way I processed a lot of the grief was to spend time in nature. And that was a creative outlet for me. But so much of our world has so many words in it, and I needed a space of no more words.
Right.
I need to find God where there's not words right now.
Yeah.
Well, We're going to switch over and do a random question here in just a couple of minutes. But let me okay. just ask you this. Well, I'm going to ask you a serious question and a not so serious question before we get to the random question. So, since you're talking about being a big hiker, the not so serious question is, did you see that video of the guy who was hiking and it was being stalked by a mountain lion this week?
Yes.
Was that crazy or what?
I'm amazed he didn't put his camera down.
Right?
That's my biggest thing. He didn't put his camera down. Oh my gosh.
Right?
He wanted to record his death? I don't know.
It's like, I'm not ready to die today. Well, you're definitely ready to keep videoing. So, wow. That was pretty terrifying to watch. So, and you could tell it wasn't staged. That was scary. Yeah. So,
Some colorful language.
Yeah, a little bit of colorful language. Absolutely. All right. So any final things that you want to share with us? You know, basically I'm going to give you a chance to have kind of the last word on your interview and anything you want to share before we move on to a random question.
Well, I think if you're thinking of labeling this the overwhelming now, I think when we live in the overwhelming now, the why questions are paramount in our hearts. And I never found the why questions readily answered, but I found that God is faithful to answer questions, who he is. On the worst day, you will find the answer to that question if you look for it.
Very good.
I look forward. I'm going to read your book.
Speak up, Nancy.
I said, I'm going to read your book. I look forward to reading it.
Nancy, we tease Nancy a little bit because she is this, she's this overwhelming personality in the real world. And she's very boisterous and loud. And I don't mean that in an obnoxious way. She's just is very strong, right? And then we put her in front of a microphone and all of a sudden she starts talking.
I go to the NPR voice, the quiet.
So I have to remind her to speak up a little bit once in a while. So Nancy has a random question. Now, I don't know how many of the episodes you listen to, but we have this box that it's got, I don't know, 8 or 9 random questions in it. And we have been using it pretty regularly, but my daughter, who's my normal co-host, she doesn't like the questions anymore. So she's been pulling them off the internet, but she's not here today. So we're going to pull
this
one.
I feel like this is a good one.
Okay. And basically, I didn't warn you about this. So this could be anything. Mm-hmm. It could be anything. So the idea is just have a little bit of fun with it. And it kind of wraps up the episode. So go ahead, Nance.
Okay, Lynn. So what is your favorite vacation destination as of this moment? I know those can change, but.
Well, my favorite vacation destination currently is a 100-year-old cabin that we just purchased in northern Arizona. And it's on Forest Service land under 150-year-old ponderosa pine.
Oh, wow.
So when we made the decision to buy it, it's like, okay, this is now our vacation destination.
Yeah, you own it. You got to use it now. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, nice. Wow. Well, Nancy, since you pulled that out, what's your favorite vacation destination? Well,
and I was thinking, because there are a lot of destinations that I like, but I will say if it's someplace that is in the middle of nowhere where there isn't any internet or phone service, that's usually my favorite. That's where I go and I can completely rest or relax. Now, that could be on a beach. It could be in the woods, but off the grid. That's my favorite destination is off the grid.
I think it's hard to find a beach location that's off the grid. No. You can
Gilligan
find
Gilligan did.
Well, Gilligan.
3 hours.
Did you know you could sing Amazing Grace to the tune of Gilligan's Island? I won't do that.
No.
You're going to get off this call and you're going to go do that now, Lynn.
Amazing Grace, how sweet this sound.
Yep, you're going to stick it in my mind now.
Yeah, you're going to be walking around. Where did that your husband will be like, where did that come from? So next time you're worship leading, you can do that one. So no, but you can find off the grid places in some national parks in the mountains. Like we went to Glacier a few years ago, Glacier National Park in Montana, and it was definitely off the grid. In fact, we would, in the mornings, if we left the park, we would drive, I don't know, probably 10, 15 miles to get out of the park. And then the first thing we did is we stopped and checked all of our messages and then we kept going.
That's true.
So, but we were off the grid.
Mike, do you have a favorite vacation destination?
Oh man. You know, I usually don't repeat things. And Nancy and I, you and I have talked about this, but I usually don't repeat vacation locations, but I've grown kind of fond of Sarasota, Florida. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because of the breakfast place. You know,
it's all about food. Yeah.
There's this great little restaurant that you would never think would be a great breakfast, but it has an awesome breakfast. It's called Wings and Weenies is the name of the restaurant in Sarasota, Florida. You wouldn't think
they would have good breakfast.
I love to go down there and eat breakfast, and then we hit the Lido Key Beach. So that's always fun. But Glacier National Park was pretty awesome, I got to say. Although we were kind of scared as we were hiking.
Because there's a lot of bears there.
There were grizzly bears all around us. We could see them on the ridges through scopes. Great breakfast place there near Glacier, right?
See, it's all about the food.
Johnson's on the hill. So Lynn, if you ever go to Glacier National Park and you stay on the east side of the park, there's a place, I think it's near Mini Glacier, but it's, called Johnson's on the Hill. And the breakfast is off the hook. So if you sit at a table and there's several of you around the table, cause it's kind of community tables, you place your order and, they bring all the food out on one platter, and then it's family style. And you can tell it's actually made. It's made.
They're using fresh cast iron skillets, and it's fresh, and it's
So off the hook, but it's maybe Glacier National Park is right up there right now for vacation destinations for me.
Okay. So, I'll have to write it down. We've never been.
Definitely go. So what's around your cabin? Do you have, is it in the mountains?
Or is it? We're at about 7,500 feet.
Okay.
So considered the mountains in Arizona, right?
Right.
And so it's just an old growth forest. And most people come out to that area to go fishing. There's a few lakes around there. We're 30 miles south of Flagstaff. So we're maybe about 2 hours from the Grand Canyon from there. So mainly, you know, we go to just disconnect.
To disconnect from the world and maybe reconnect with God kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And if you need to connect with anyone, you take your phone down to the fire station that has good reception.
There you go.
Nice.
Nancy would like that place.
Yep.
She would definitely like that.
And you see other cars there. The phones
they're all
out,
doing the same thing.
Trying to find enough bandwidth to check their mail or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yep. Oh, that's awesome. Well, Lynn, it's been a joy to have you with us today. I wish you all the success with your book and as also with Sarah's work in floating your new one around. Hopefully you'll find a publisher pretty quick. Since under your belt, that should make it a little bit easier for you. But I think God will bless you for your works. And I definitely appreciate that. Let's remind everyone your website. I messed it up earlier, so I'm going to let you give it. What's your website again?
You can find me at lynnhartke.com, LynnHartke. And my book is called Under a Desert Sky.
Very good. Thank you for being with us, Lynn.
So nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Mike.
Take care.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address, authormicheldecamp authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel, can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.